Welcome to Honey and the Hex. I'm Tatum.
And I'm Tansy.
And we're a sibling duo exploring the origins, traditions and intersections of folklore and where they lie today.
Each episode will bring you our learnings of myths, magic and mystery by shining a light on the past and how it's not always as distant as it seems.
We were having some sound issues on this day, so apologies about the sound quality of the first section of this episode. We hope you enjoy.
Romulus and Remus, Mary-Kate and Ashley. It's hard to deny the world finds twins fascinating. But what of the mythology and the darker side of our obsession? We'll see you in a New York Minute.
I think only some people are going to get that reference.
New York Minute.
But if people need to know, it's Mary-Kate and Ashley. I feel like another one of my favourites was that Passport in Paris.
So good. But actually the best one was Double Double Toil and Trouble. Do you remember?
Do I remember? Double Double Toil and Trouble was... We watched it on repeat all the time.
All the time. It was like Aunt Sophia and the other one. And oh my gosh, it was so good. I think we should re-download that.
I feel like it still probably stands up as quite a good film. And I remember there was The Grave Digger, right? And then there was Oscar the Clown.
Oscar the Clown.
And you really felt like you were in their gang.
Yeah.
It was such a good film. Like the storyline was amazing. The acting and the casting was incredible. I wonder when it was. Do you know? 80s? No, 90s. Actually, I think it came out in my birth year. I'm going to Google it. Sorry, but 1993.
Wow.
My birth year.
What's the IMDb rating?
Let's have a look.
Does it stand up?
3-star? No, wait. Out of 5, though?
No, it's out of 10.
Nah, then it's... Oh, sorry, it's 5.8.
Oh, so... Anyway, fine. if we were to review it, we would give it a 10 out of 10.
No, it is a 10 out of 10, I'm sorry. But
it is.
When the gravedigger's like, goodbye, take care, and beware. That line stays in my head forever.
Okay, so next sleepover, which is probably tonight, we will... get that on Amazon Prime or whatever it's on and we'll watch it. Anyway, we're not talking about Mary-Kate and Ashley today. Although, have you seen that meme where they're like, the Olsen twins look like one of them knows when you're going to die and the other one can see into your soul or something like that?
No, but that's great.
Yeah, it's so funny. We really can't do a twins episode without talking about the constellations of the zodiac. So let's talk astrology.
Yeah, let's talk about that Gemini moon you've got.
Okay, so I will be upfront and say I am a Gemini moon and I'm not embarrassed of it. It explains a lot, so it's fine. I've just got to deal with it with CBD or Red Bull.
That is the most Gemini moon thing to say.
I am now going to do Tatum dirty and say that Tatum...
Why?
Tatum, when we were younger, got with two twins and they weren't even identical. Remember, I can't remember.
Yes, I do remember. I'm not going to say their names. I was dating one of them. Bear in mind, I was like 13 or 14, maybe 14. Mm. I was dating one of them and then we broke up. And I think maybe like there was a festival or some sort of like big celebration a week later and I got with the other twin.
You can't even say I thought it was you because they weren't even identical twins.
No, exactly. I was just being silly.
Anyway, really need to move on.
Okay, so Gemini is Latin for twins.
It's also the third astrological sign in the zodiac under the tropical zodiac. The sun transits around this sign between May 21st and June 21st. So where does mythology come into this?
Twins in mythology are often associated with healing. Castor and Polydeuces are twin brothers in Greek mythology. They were the sons of Leda, and their father was either Zeus or King Tyndareus of Sparta.
I love either. So Leda was busy then.
Good for her. Love that. They had different fathers. So Castor was the son of Tyndareus and Pollux was the son of Zeus.
Okay, nice.
Growing up, Castor and Pollux were inseparable. As they grew older, their bond became stronger. They fought alongside each other in battle until sadly Castor was killed.
Pollux, as the son of Zeus, had the gift of immortality. So although Castor had died in battle, Pollux was able to share his immortality with Castor, so they could be side by side for eternity. he gave up his life to spend the afterlife with his brother. And you will see depictions of the twins as two bodies and one head, as though they are one.
So Zeus turned them into the constellation of Gemini.
Thanks for that, moon. As with all mythology, there are many accounts of the twins. In some myths, Poseidon awarded them with horses to ride and save men who had become stranded or injured in shipwrecks.
As characterised by Castor and Pollux, Geminis are known for having two sides to their personality, represented by the twins.
The CBD and the Red Bull. Our first story takes us back to 1957, to the small town of Hexham in Northumberland, where John Pollock and his family lived. John Pollock was raised a Christian, but later converted to Catholicism. Although a devout Catholic, John believed strongly in reincarnation, which contested his Catholic beliefs. He prayed to God each evening, pleading for a sign that reincarnation exists. Any sign in order to prove the priest wrong and confirm his beliefs. John and his wife, Florence Pollock, had four children and they ran a successful milk and grocery delivery business, which was loved by the local community, and the family were happy and they were very comfortable. Their two daughters, Joanna, and her younger sister, Jacqueline, were inseparable, even though there were 5 years between them. They played together for hours, they had their own secret places, and were best friends. Joanna took on a mothering role towards her little sister and was extremely protective of her.
Devastatingly, in May of 1957, whilst walking to Sunday service, they were struck by a car and killed. The driver of the vehicle was a woman who lived locally. She had decided to take her own life by ingesting what she believed to be lethal amounts of phenobarbital with aspirin after losing custody of her children. She was witnessed by locals driving erratically and she drove directly to the children intentionally. They were unable to escape. Their parents were, of course, absolutely heartbroken and inconsolable. It is the worst unimaginable horror to have happened.
As time went on, Florence endeavoured to move on and tried her best not to think about the girls. John, however, became consumed by their deaths, believing them to be a punishment from God for continuously pleading for proof of reincarnation. With this belief taking over his life, he was convinced that Joanna and Jacqueline would be reborn into their family as twins. Florence became extremely angry with John's obsession, and their relationship and marriage was under threat. Despite this, Florence fell pregnant. This compelled John's obsession further. He truly believed their daughters would be reincarnated. However, when they visited the doctor, only one fetal heartbeat was detected.
This is where it gets weird. With no history of twins in either John or Florence's family, and only one predicted child, on the 4th of October 1958, she gave birth to twins. Twin girls, I may add. And their parents named them Gillian and Jennifer. There were chilling similarities between the sets of girls, the primary being the identical birthmark that Jennifer had on her hip, in the exact same place that Jacqueline had on hers. It is also extremely rare for identical twins to have different birthmarks. However, Gillian and Jennifer had contrasting marks.
So rather than the hip birthmark that her twin sister had, as some twins have matching birthmarks, Gillian had a birthmark on her head. What makes this so unusual is that when Jacqueline was 3 years old, she tripped over and hit her head on the bucket, which resulted a scar on her forehead above her right eye, in the exact same place Gillian was born with her birthmark. In a bid to move on away from the horrors the family experienced in Hexham, they decided to move 30 miles away to Whitley Bay when the twins were just a few months old. As the twins grew older, eerie occurrences began to happen. Florence had stored Joanna and Jacqueline's old toys in the attic out of sight, but the twins began requesting these toys, even naming the dolls by name. They could identify whose toys were whose, and there would be no arguments. Gillian had spotted a clothes wringer that had belonged to Joanna and claimed it as her own, and it had been gifted to her by Santa Claus. She stated, "There is my clothes wringer." As mentioned earlier, Joanna had taken a mothering role towards her younger sister, and Gillian did the same to Jennifer. The similarities between the girls were uncanny. Eerily, the twins had severe phobias relating to roads and cars. When crossing the street, they would clutch onto their mother extremely tightly, and they were very wary. There was a time when a car engine started in an alleyway, and their father watched in horror as they began to cling to each other, screaming, the car, it's coming for us. They also had recurring nightmares about being hit by a car.
Now, all of this is pretty convincing. However, Florence refused the theory. Florence, who did not share the same beliefs as John did, continued to deny that the girls had been reincarnated. Until one day she heard the girls playing or acting out a scene in which I find particularly sinister. Florence witnessed Gillian holding Jennifer with her head on her lap, shouting, "The blood coming out of your eyes, that's where the car hit you." She also heard Gillian pointing at Jennifer's forehead birthmark, saying, "This is the mark Jennifer got when she fell on a bucket." Florence also agreed that the twins were fond of the same food and activities as Joanna and Jacqueline. When the girls were 4 years old, the family decided they were ready to visit Hexham again. Of course, the twins had no memory of their birthplace, being just 4 months old when they left. However, whilst they were walking around the town, the twins could recognise places that they'd never been to.
I mean, what do you think? I think the similarities are obviously uncanny. Birthmarks in the same places that their other children had had injuries. And it does seem like the most realistic case of reincarnation that I've come across.
It is super weird. I think maybe with the stories, obviously, their dad was probably talking about...
I mean, he was obsessed with reincarnation.
He was so obsessed. So it's like, maybe some of this was like going into their brains, giving them their own story. I don't know about the physicalities, like the birthmarks and scars. That is strange. But when it comes to the things that they were saying and the stuff going in their head, they're probably listening all the time.
Yeah, because a lot of people think that kids don't pick up on stuff that you're saying. But I mean, I remember being a kid and I can remember stuff. And people just kind of disregard you as a child and that you're not going to remember stuff.
You know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's going on.
And you take in that information at a very young age.
Yeah, and they had brothers. The brothers probably told them stories, true, horror stories. Like, you know how teen boys are or however old they were. They probably did tell them the stories as well. And I don't know about the toys. Maybe they were mentioned in passing. And it just seems like their father was so obsessed with reincarnation. And... yeah, he put that trauma onto them.
Yeah. Obviously, who knows? It's not for us to say whether it was or wasn't. But I just think that when you're younger, the line between reality and fantasy is blurred. And you can sort of take in information and then confirm that as truth.
I think the fact that their mother didn't believe it was true is kind of more would sway me towards being that they were reincarnated, just because if it was all made up for a news story or something, she would be kind of in on it as well. So that kind of swayed me a little bit. All in all, who knows, but it is very eerie. And they, I mean, look, Gillian and Jennifer, they forgot all of their past similarities to the twins that had died, and they, you know, they went on to live normal lives, and their memories like faded of all of that stuff in Hexham. Do you believe in reincarnation?
I think anything's possible. I think it's wild to sort of be sure about anything when like life is just so weird and so much can't be explained. So, I mean, personally, it's not one of my beliefs, but I can see that it is a belief that makes sense. It's a really beautiful concept. I love it as a concept. I would love to come back as a bat. That would be so sick. That would be so
an
cool.
Austin bat.
Oh, yes. And the idea of rebirth and getting another chance. I just think there is also aspects of, I don't like the fact that you should live your life that you're currently living for a second life.
Agreed, completely.
And I guess that crosses over with other beliefs as well, where I don't really like that for me, for my own life. My experience of being in a disabled body and like having a really difficult upbringing and just lots of challenges in life, I just don't like the idea that I have to go, oh, it's because I did something bad in my previous life that life's hard now. I'm just a bit like, I don't know, it's something icky about that to me.
I completely agree. But then I guess it's also like, if you do fuck up this one, you do get a second chance. But maybe we should talk about like reincarnation in general a little bit. So reincarnation is the religious or philosophical concept that when a living being dies, rebirth will occur in a new physical form. In many religions, this is their principal concept. Religions that hold this belief include Buddhism, Hinduism, Sikhism, and closer to home, Wicca. The word stems from the Latin, entering the flesh again. Through the lens of Wicca, I'm going to quote Wiccan priest Tom David. "Some religions say we only get one trip through life. then we're off to an eternity of reward or punishment. Other religions reimagine what spirit is based on the understanding that we all have those two parts, the finite and eternal. They believe that we, here on this planet, are incarnations of an eternal essence, a soul. Among them are Buddhism, Taoism, and many neo-pagan religions, such as my own path, Wicca. Those who follow this philosophy understand that our time here is a temporary phase, which our soul passes on its way to enlightenment or perfection, whatever. As we progress, our souls are reincarnated into a sequence of lifetimes, so we can learn. We aren't expected to get it right the first time. We're only human after all.
I do like the mythology of the phoenix, that you can combust and then you rise again from the ashes.
Yeah, I love a phoenix.
It is a really gorgeous one, isn't it?
100%. So we're all coming back as a phoenix and we can just keep doing it again and again. Oh, that hinge date didn't work. Burst into flames. Next one. That one didn't work. Burst into flames.
I do struggle with the idea of you've got to, the way that you behave in this life will then affect the next life. What I enjoy is the fact that we're always evolving as people. So we almost get reincarnated in this one, the body that we are currently in, because we are constantly changing, evolving. So we almost have these, I guess reincarnation is when you go into a different form, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't change into a different form. Oh well, some people do. There's lots of transgender people, gender fluid people, so I guess it can mean many things to the individual. For me, I just feel like I'm always changing, so that is my own type of reincarnation.
I am definitely not the same person I was 10 years ago. I'm like completely different person.
Yes,
so.
Thank God, because you were awful. No, I'm joking.
That is so true. I like looked on Facebook memories the other day and you'd written on my wall like, are you alive?
Yeah. All right, let's not get into the trauma.
Let's not. Let's move on to our next story.
June and Jennifer Gibbons were identical twins born in 1963 and raised in Wales. June was born first and Jennifer 10 minutes later. They were the daughters of Caribbean immigrants who moved to the UK in the early 1960s as part of the Windrush generation. Their father, Aubrey Gibbons, was a technician for the Royal Air Force and their mother a housewife. The twins also had an older brother, David, and an older sister, Greta. When the twins were four, their younger sister, Rosie, was born, whom they adored.
It was clear as they were growing up, the twins were struggling with their speech and had identical speech impediments. Rosie, who was much younger than them, had overtaken them in speech development. The twins could only communicate with each other due to this. Everyone who spoke to them really struggled to understand them, so between them, they decided to stop talking. Their mother, Gloria, said, "They were always shy, not speaking, and when they spoke, we couldn't understand them or what they were saying, and when they knew we couldn't understand it, they went back into their shell." A later quote from June states, "It was frustrating. We had to repeat ourselves more often, and when we couldn't be bothered to repeat ourselves, we wouldn't speak and left it. People would end up saying, 'What are you saying? What are you saying?' And we thought, if you can't hear us now, you can't hear us never. And we decided not to speak, and it got into a habit of not speaking." It was in this time that June and Jennifer developed their own language and would speak to each other in this language, but not to anyone else. "We made a pact," June explained. "We weren't going to speak to anybody. We stopped talking altogether, only us two in our bedroom upstairs." Now, this is a phenomenon known as cryptophasia, where identical or fraternal twins create a language that only two of them can understand. There are reports of up to 50% of young twins communicating in their own language. And this can be due to phonological development, referring to how children learn to organise sounds into meaning during early stages of growth. Twins can also develop an ability to speak to one another without learning the grammar of their parents' language. The word derives from the Greek crypto, meaning secret, and phasia, meaning speech. So they had their own language which they would speak to each other, but to anyone else they were mute. This is known as selective mutism, and it's an anxiety disorder in which a person is unable to speak when exposed to specific situations. This could be places, people, or any other triggers.
They moved around the UK a lot to different RAF bases due to their father's job, more than often being the only black children in the community, and this was in the 60s and 70s. They were faced with horrific racism and bullying. They eventually relocated permanently in 1974 to Haverford West, a town in Wales. Sadly, this small town was known to be extremely racist, and the twins were continuously bullied. At school, they were really great students, very bright and intelligent. It was just that they were silent, and they were completely ostracized, which, I mean, it must have been a very traumatic experience. They even had to be dismissed before other students to avoid the bullying. In 1974, a medical officer named John Rees came to the girls' school to administer vaccines for tuberculosis. He noticed that the girls were in a trance-like state throughout. On top of not saying a word, they didn't even react or flinch to the needle going into their skin. He was extremely concerned by this and went to the school's headmaster, who, when he reported this to him, said he didn't seem to think the girls were especially troubled.
John Rees was baffled by the headteacher's response and referred the case to a child psychologist, Evan Davies. When Davies tried to speak to the girls, they of course remained silent. He stated, "Treatment under these circumstances presents a considerable challenge which I am reluctant to accept." So they were referred once again to Anne Trahan, a chief speech therapist at a hospital in Haverford West. They began their treatment in 1977, and although they never spoke to Trahan directly, she proposed that if she left the room, would they speak to each other? And they did. She recorded their speech and unearthed that their secret language was actually a mix of English and Barbadian slang, but sped up so much that it was impossible for anyone to understand. Trahan relayed that when she was in the room with the twins, she thought that June was eager to speak to her, but was forbidden not to by the eye signals that Jennifer laid onto her, which prevented her from speaking. June named this eye language. Jennifer was in complete control of her twin. Trahan even went as far as to say, "The thought entered my mind that June was possessed by her twin." Their mother gifted them journals for Christmas in a hope that it would get the twins to communicate. They became obsessed with their journals and began writing down all of their thoughts. In this time, they were transferred yet again to the Eastgate Centre for Special Education in Pembroke. Their parents left the trust in the British authorities to make these decisions. Their father stated, "We were never, like, consulted at any time." Unfortunately, the girls were not making any progress at Eastgate, even with the therapy sessions. They still wouldn't speak. They even attended their sister's wedding and did not say a word. The family was becoming extremely frustrated, and the twins were often described as insolent and rude. By the time the girls were 14, the staff at Eastgate were still unable to get through to them and highly suggested that they be separated. By doing this, there was the hope that the twins could become their own selves and begin a life where they were two separate beings with distinct personalities. They also wanted to know which twin was controlling the situation.
Although the twins had never been apart, it is something that they had personally considered and had even written in their notepads, requesting one of them to be sent to America and the other one to Barbados. However, when the plan was put forward to them, they ran screaming out of the office and began physically abusing each other. June pulled a chunk out of Jennifer's hair, and Jennifer in turn dug her nails into June's cheek. They began talking at this point, promising to start speaking if they were allowed to remain together. However, the next day, the pair fell silent again. The separation was carried out in 1978. Unfortunately, this worsened the twins and they fell into a catatonic state. They would not move. June could not even be lifted out of bed. And when they did carry her out, all they could do was prop her up against a wall. As they got older, they moved back into their parents' house. They only spoke with their younger sister, Rose, and if they wanted to watch TV, they would write a note to the parents saying, "We would like to watch Top of the Pops at 7 p.m. They wrote in the journals that the pain they were causing their mother hurt them, and they wanted to make her proud. As they both loved to write, from the time their mother gifted them journals, they decided to become famous authors. They found a local creative writing course and enrolled as one person. They began avidly creating stories, poems, novels. June penned a novel called Pepsi Cola Addict, centering a teenager from Malibu who is seduced by a teacher and sent away to a reform clinic. This was self-published using their doll money.
The twins were aware that their relationship was unlivable. Jennifer even wrote in her journal an excerpt which I will quote from. "We have become fatal enemies in each other's eyes. We feel the irritating, deadly rays come out of our bodies, stinging each other's skin. I say to myself, can I get rid of my shadow? Impossible or not possible? Without my shadow, would I die? Without my shadow, would I gain life, be free or left to die? Without my shadow, which I identify with a face of misery, deception or murder. As time went on, the twins discovered drugs and alcohol, which they realized made them more confident in their speech and around boys. If they had a bottle of whiskey, they could communicate freely. They even lost their virginity to the same boy with the other twin watching. The drugs spiraled them into a world of theft, vandalism, and arson. In her diary, June wrote, I am planning on making a petrol bomb, a bottle of petrol and paper, and hurl it through the window. I am going to become the biggest arsonist around. Well, this came true in 1981 when they set fire to a tractor store, thrilling in watching it burn, and then running home and relaying the excitement of the experience in their diaries. They had multiple run-ins with the law. Police did a search of their house and they found the diaries explaining in detail all of the crimes they had committed, which ultimately these crimes led them to be committed to Broadmoor Psychiatric Hospital indefinitely, being diagnosed with a psychopathic personality disorder. Broadmoor is a high security psychiatric hospital in Berkshire. It was originally known as Broadmoor Lunatic Asylum, dating back to 1863. Most residents in the UK have heard of Broadmoor. It has been home to some of the UK's most notorious killers, criminals, and arsonists in the country. Now, the girls, instead of having the freedom in their own bedroom to write and create stories with their dolls, they were confined to the walls here. June later said, juvenile delinquents get 2 years in prison. We got 12 years of hell because we didn't speak. We lost hope, really. I wrote a letter to the Queen asking her to get us out, but we were trapped. Having two 19-year-old twins sent to Broadmoor was unheard of, but no hospital would take them considering their history of arson. The twins were given high doses of antipsychotic meds, which left them unable to concentrate or to work on their writing. They were in separate wards originally, but this subsequently led to June attempting to take her own life. She wrote, I really aim to be alone, yet I am deceiving myself. Can I stand being alone? My heart does not beat so fast now. It only beats fast when Jay is around. It's easy to forget that the twins could speak. They chose not to. They were intelligent, they were self-aware, and they were talented writers. They attempt to be released from Broadmoor, writing to the Home Office, the Queen, and anyone who thought would be able to help them. Finally, the twins gain notoriety when Sunday Times journalist Marjorie Wallace covered their lives in an article. This helped get their story out to the public, shedding light on the British criminal system and the systematic racism that had kept them inside Broadmoor.
With the backlash of people complaining to have the twins go free, they are finally to be transferred to a low security clinic where they will have more freedom. They were almost 30 years old. Of course, they are delighted by this. They have been in Broadmoor the entirety of their 20s, on high doses of antipsychotics, with no lives to lead and no idea when they would get out.
What no one knew was that June and Jennifer had made a pact, not just the pact that allowed them only to speak to each other. They had a bond so strong they believed neither of them could survive successfully whilst the other lived. In a vow, they promised to each other that if one of them were to die, the other would have to live a normal life. Jennifer agreed to make the sacrifice of her life.
On the day of their transfer to the new clinic in Wales, Jennifer rested her head on June's shoulder and said, at long last, we're out. Less than 12 hours later, she was dead at just 29 years old.
June had stated that her sister had been acting slightly strange the day prior to leaving Broadmoor and that her speech had been slurring, but nothing to cause immediate alarm. And it was said that Jennifer died of sudden inflammation of the heart. On the night of Jennifer's death, June penned in her diary, today, my beloved twin sister, Jennifer, died. She is dead. Her heart stopped beating. She will never recognize me. Mum and Dad came to see her body. I kissed her stone-colored face. I went hysterical with grief. We prayed for forgiveness, but of course he didn't forgive us. He punished us for 12 years. He hated us. He didn't listen to us. We suffered. And at the end of it all, what does it mean if she died? And she also went on to say, I am free. Jennifer has given her life for me. Inscribed on Jennifer's grave is a poem by June. We once were two, We two made one. We no more two. Through life be one. Rest in peace.
Oh, what a story.
Well, since Jennifer's death, June has gone on to live a normal life.
Yeah, completely normal. She is no longer monitored by psychiatric services. She speaks freely. And she no longer feels the need to write because she's able to use her voice and communicate with her voice freely. And it took Jennifer giving her life for June to be able to do that in the pact that they made.
I think as people who aren't twins, it's hard for us to ever be able to truly comprehend what it means to be a twin. That sort of communication and energy that a lot of twins talk about. Obviously, they had this to quite an extreme level. But you hear people all the time saying, you know, when they're apart, they know something's happened to their twin, or their twin will call them and they already know what they're going to say, stuff like that. And it's just something that I think we have it a bit as siblings, but it's obviously something really special and potent when you're a twin.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel that a little bit with you, but obviously, yeah, it's different when you've actually, when you're real twins, I guess. So,
yeah.
When I first heard this story, I mean, I had shivers because it's such, I mean, these two girls, they were so intelligent. They were really gifted. They experienced a lot of trauma with the racism, and that probably had a really strong effect on them remaining silent, especially along with the speech impediments, that if you're that frustrated, you know, people can't understand you. You're speaking. You would just give up, wouldn't you? You're like, if you can't understand me, oh, do you know what? Let's just only speak to each other. We can understand each other. We have each other and we don't need anyone else. I think because they committed these horrific crimes, and they're really lucky that no one died in the fires, and that what they did was really dangerous, they needed help, and they didn't get that from being in Broadmoor for 12 years when they hadn't committed such awful crimes as to the murderers and people who were in there in the walls with them. So I think that that was a real serious issue. Like, they should not have been in Broadmoor for that long. And I think their sister actually said that the British justice system really let them down, and that they didn't keep an eye on Jennifer's health. I mean, because she did just die out of...
Yeah, the lack of support is wild, and it's very real even now.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's real now, I can't even imagine how bad it was then. But to be put away for that long without actual support, when you're clearly unwell,
mm-hmm.
and you're a child, like, they were so young as well.
Yeah, the entirety of your 20s in a psychiatric facility. Like, what good was that doing anyone? And their parents just obviously trusted that that was the right place for them. And they lost all those years with their daughters.
My friend Ellen was telling me in the UK, autistic people stay on average of 5.5 years in inpatient psychiatric hospitals compared to an average of 35 days for the general population. So it truly shows that the care isn't there, you know, especially with things like autism and mutism. And so instead of getting the correct support, they're just kept away for longer. And what is that going to do to people's health?
Exactly.
Of course, that's going to make them worse,
yeah,
rather than putting things in place.
And being referred again and again to this person, this person, this person, when they already don't want to speak to people they don't know. They don't want to speak to their family. So being continuously referred to new people, that could not have been any help whatsoever. And it just feels like people just passed them on. They didn't want to deal with it, and they just thought that's someone else's problem. What I find really interesting about this whole thing is that it seems... people do say there's a thin line between love and hate. That's something to think about, because in their diaries they were writing that they hated each other, but realistically they couldn't live without each other. They were catatonic when they were separated. Jennifer wanted to give her life for June so that June could live normally.
And surely there has to be a lot of love there.
Yeah.
To make a commitment that is your life. It seems like the hatred was just as strong as the amount of love.
Yeah. There's been so many documentaries. Loads of people have covered this on their YouTube channels, in podcasts. We're not the first to cover this, but we just found it really interesting. And I've always been interested by twins because obviously our dad's a twin. I love Jedward.
Jedward are actually great. They're really political. I remember.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
What were they on? What was the show?
X Factor.
And I'm not going to lie, I didn't like them at the time. I don't know why. I was obviously just being uptight because actually they're camp and fun. Like, I would probably love them if they were on telly now, but at the time I didn't. But then I started, I think you told me to follow them on Twitter, and I was like, oh my God, they are absolutely incredible.
Their tweets after the Queen died, I just had to retweet all of them.
Get on the Jedward bandwagon. It's a fun time.
I've got a Jedward mug. And also they are.
Not the merch.
They are good looking, you know.
Like, No. Right, let's end this here.
They are good looking.
Okay, well, good for you.
They're like, they're kind of vampiric, like pale.
Doesn't make someone good looking.
No, but like.
Okay, fine. Right, moving on. So our dad's a twin, which I don't know if I ever want to have kids. Who knows what the future holds? But I think that means we could potentially have twins because it misses.
Yeah, we could have twins. At the moment, we're very much cat and sausage dog kind of.
Well, I might just get a litter of cats and that can be my... That could be all of my twins. I don't know about having a baby. Anyway.
100%.
Yes, there was actually a film that came out only in 2022 of the Silent Twins. And
it was sensory hell.
Oh my gosh. So it was starring Letitia Wright and Tamara Lawrence. I thought it'd be really good because the cast was good. I watched the trailer. I was like, this seems super interesting.
It's got quite good reviews, right?
Yeah, or some really bad ones, some really good ones. But I didn't read them till after because I wanted to have our own opinion. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hated it, like passionately despised it.
We paused it so many times because we just couldn't.
It was sensory hell.
It was sensory hell. It made them really unlikable. And obviously, I've done months of research into these twins. I kind of feel like I know them, which is creepy. But I feel that... You know, I can see the intelligence they had, the humanity in them. Whereas this film just made them into creepy, evil twins, in my opinion. That's what I got. Maybe that's because you can't explain so much in a film. But having watched interviews of June and all of that stuff, I was very disappointed. And I thought it was a really unfair portrayal.
The sound design on it was very jarring. Maybe that was done on purpose, but when you're neurodivergent, like, you don't want to be put through that sensory hell. I thought they didn't show the complexities of them at all. I couldn't connect to them. I just didn't like them at all. And I don't think that's strong writing and filmmaking, because I'm saying this is someone who's never, ever, ever made anything like that. I'm like, this is really like not good filmmaking. No, but personally, I mean, look, if you liked it, you liked it. But I found it, you need to like characters, even if the characters are flawed.
Okay, we could go on and on about this. Yeah, like I said, there's a million other people that have covered this also. So if you do want to have a look at that. So let's round off. Best twins.
Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Oh, do you know who's good twins? Those twins in Haunting of Hill House.
Oh yeah.
And they, one of them knows when, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Haunted Hill House, cover your ears, when she dies, he knows, he wakes up in rehab and he's like, oh my gosh,
I forgot about those twins. Those twins are so good.
Okay,
what's the character names, you know?
Oh, I can't
I fancy her so much.
I fancy him so much.
Perfect.
Never have the same time. No, I fancy her as well. Shining twins.
Yeah, nice.
Sister, were they twins?
Never know how much I missed ya. Mm-hmm.
Checking out the family tree.
That was such a good show.
Jedward, if you're listening, I'm still hitting you.
Okay. See ya.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy our podcast, please subscribe or follow on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on.
If you want to support us, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can follow us on Instagram at @honeyinthehex.
If you have any of your own folklore stories, we would love it if you would share them with us.
Until next time, Coven.